chemicals and compost, vaccinations and irrigation. It's time for Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark.
Hey, good day to all you great stewards of the land. It's Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark on 96.5 KECO. Current temperature is 81 degrees, and winds are out of south-southeast at 3 miles an hour. Humidity is at 42%. Visibility is 9 miles right now, and the heat index is same as the temperature, 81. Well, welcome to the show. We got a great show today lined out for you guys, and lots of things to talk about. Not even sure I can get it all in here, but if you want to sell some hay, text in on the KCO Ag Text line at 580-225-9697. 225-9697. At the end of the hour, I'll put it on. This Thursday and Friday is the Oklahoma Women in Agriculture and Business Conference in Oklahoma City, put on by OSU. For more information on this, get a hold of your OSU Extension officer in your county or get on the OSU Extension website. A lot of things going on today. This one here came across the web yesterday. Appeals court confirms beef checkoff constitutionality. A federal appeals court ruling that ended a six-year legal battle over the beef checkoff. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals affirmed a lower court's ruling that the beef checkoff is not in violation of the First Amendment and that speech by state beef councils is government speech. The lawsuit was filed in Montana in 2016 by the Ranchers Cattlemen Action Legal Fund, United Stock Growers, and American RCAF USA, who alleged the use of industry assessments collected by state beef councils for advertising and promotion materials was a violation of the First Amendment rights of beef producers. In 2018, the USDA entered it of understanding with many state beef councils, which gave the USDA significant discretion to approve or reject any qualified state beef council's promotion activities. Based on the new MOUs in 2020, the U.S. District Court ruled speech by the Montana Beef Council and other qualified state beef councils is government speech. The ruling was appealed, but the three-judged appellate panel rejected RCAF's argument that QSBCs are not receiving adequate oversight, government oversight, that is. The appeals court is a long-awaited victory, says Colin Woodall, National Cattlemen's Beef Association CEO. This decision ends a legal battle that has spanned more than 6 years and exhausted and significant checkoff and industry resources. We are pleased this battle is now behind us. In the statement to the media, RCAS CEO Bill Bullard said the lawsuit brought a measure to reform to the checkoff. The district court agreed that our concern had merit and granted us a preliminary injunction. In response, the USDA instituted new measures to correct its constitution violation, Bullard said. Though we are obviously disappointed with this final ruling, we did in fact successfully reform the beef checkoff program. Well, today my guest is John D. Boucher from the Jackson County Conservation District. It's Today in Ag on 96.5 KECO.
We raise registered Red Angus. We sell bulls, heifers, seed stock quality type. Red Angus offer superior marbling. Docility is probably the biggest selling point for Red Angus. The maternal traits and some heat tolerance. Benji White, B&L Red Angus. BLRedAngus.com on Facebook. Follow us at B&L Red Angus.
Lori White, B&L Red Angus. BLRedAngus.com. You can find us on Facebook by searching B&L Red Angus.
Mosey on down to Hobart Stockyard's weekly cattle sale at Highway 183 North in Hobart, Oklahoma. The sale is every Wednesday at 9:30. If you need to consign, call Rex Fleming at 580-331-8547. They receive cattle all day Mondays and Tuesdays. Buyers can bid in person or online. register at lmaauction.com or download the LMA Ringside app. Hobart Stockyards, where we want your business and we do appreciate it.
It's known as the thief in the night. A lack of cattle mineral can lead to decreased weaning weights, small, weak calves, and severely compromised health. Don't let a gap in your feeding program rob your herd's performance. Stop by Farmers Union Co-op in Elk City and pick up a bag of Purina Wind and Rain Storm Mineral today. Farmers Union Co-op of Elk City is your authorized Purina dealer.
Jimmy's all wound up and ready to go. Here comes more of Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark on 96.5 KECO.
All right. Well, welcome back. It's still 81 degrees out there, and the wind is out of the south-southeast at 3 miles an hour. And you know, when I said your name a while ago, John, I've been practicing this all morning. It sounded like it was French. It is Bucci, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, I think I said Boucher while he was on. Anyway, sorry, my French is really good, but my English sucks. But anyway, welcome to the show. John D. is the conservation officer for the county of Jackson County, and welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jimmy.
And will you tell everybody who you are, like where you're from and how long you've been there in Jackson County?
Okay. Well, first of all, I'd like to say thank you for giving us the opportunity to promote our conservation districts in this area.
Well, I'm big on it.
Well, we appreciate that. I am John D. Bucci. I'm proud to say that I'm the fourth generation of a Jackson County farm family. My great-grandfather purchased our family's first farm north of Warren, Oklahoma, in 1895 when this was still part of Greer County, Texas.
Wow.
My uncle still owns that farm today, and it is currently enrolled in our Conservation Reserve, or CRP, program through the USDA FSA office. So conservation has been part of our family all of my life and since before that. I graduated from Navajo High School and WOSC before attending Oklahoma State University. I've been married to my wonderful wife, Dana, for 35 years. We have two sons, Dylan and Darren. Them and their wives, both them and their wives live here in our county and work here. We're proud grandparents to the three cutest grandkids in the whole world.
There's nothing better than grandkids, isn't there?
That's right. That's the good Lord's way of rewarding you for not choking your teenagers.
Yeah, or other things. But, well, yeah. You got Jackson County is a big county, and there's a lot of things in Jackson County. You got Altus, the biggest town in southwest Oklahoma, as far as I'm concerned, big city, let me rephrase that. You got the Altus Air Force Base, and you have the Altus Water District, Irrigation District in there. So you got a lot of conservation going on in that area.
Yes, sir. We do. The Conservation District's been a big part of that for a long time. I've had the opportunity or the privilege to work for the Conservation District for 34 years this month. And our district is very rich in the history of conservation, not only in Oklahoma, but in the United States as well. There was a group of men in Oklahoma, seven of those men, that were called the Magnificent Seven. And two of those Magnificent Seven were from Jackson County.
Really?
Mr. Robert McCaskill of Altus and Mr. Ward Perryman of Duke. And Ward served on our board here for 55 years, so I had the opportunity to work for him early in my career. And he and I spent a lot of time together going to meetings or what have you. And he told me some of the stories of the beginnings of conservation. He said that those seven guys would meet over around Chickasha somewhere, and they would board a train and ride that train to Washington, D.C. to lobby Congress. And that lobbying resulted in the establishment of the Conservation Enabling Act of 1937, giving birth to the conservation movement of our country. And soon after that, in 1938, the Jackson County Conservation District was established, and and still continues to operate today.
And now that's quite a feat back in 1937-38, because that was right after the Dust Bowl days and right before World War II.
When they were lobbying in Congress, they were up there lobbying when Black Sunday occurred.
Right.
And it took till Tuesday for that dust to reach Washington, D.C. But while they were on the floor of Congress lobbying for conservation, the dust from Black Sunday settled into Washington, D.C., and it made such an impact on those leaders that they decided they better do something. So
I didn't know that. I learned something today. I'm glad you're on, because you're my kind of guy.
Maybe a little divine intervention there.
Yeah. Do you think they planned it that way?
I don't know. Somebody did. The good Lord did.
I'm going to say the guy right above us probably did that. So is that when they decided, is that in the time frame where they decided that they were going to do Altus or Lugard Lake?
Not long after that.
Right.
The Lugard Altus Irrigation District is who manages that lake. They had built a dam back in the 30s, a smaller dam, and then in the 40s they built a bigger dam over the top of it.
Right.
And then they established their irrigation district, which is a tremendous engineering feat. If you think about what the equipment they had in the 40s to be able to design, to be able to survey and design and lay out that system, because it's all a gravity flow system that runs from Lugard Altus Lake to 9 miles south of Altus, and every bit of that travels by gravity flow. So those ditches have to run on a contour. They have to follow the grade of the land to bring that water to those farms.
Yeah, it's quite a it just totally, my interest is unbelievable and how that works down there. And it got my interest level went up. I went to visit some friends in Idaho, and that whole valley over there near Fruitland, which is close to the Oregon border, it's all irrigation district ditches too. And it's bigger than the one at Altus. And it just amazed me how they figure out this lake above on this mountain that fills this river, and this river takes these ditches and takes water, and they got to keep up with this landowner gets so much water, and this landowner gets this much water. It's quite an operation, and that one at Lugard's no different.
Yes, sir.
But go ahead, sorry.
The way they funded that project in its beginning was they came down to these farms, and they had kind of through their survey work had decided which farms would be able to water from that use that water to irrigate and which ones wouldn't. The ones that would were eligible. They went to those farmers, and those farmers agreed and allowed them to take liens against their farms to fund that project. So basically, these farmers in the irrigation district paid for or funded this irrigation project, the lake and the irrigation project, to make the water available to them.
Well, you're that
paid out over a long time through the, I think, Bureau of
Land Management.
Land Management.
Yep. Yep, I read it in there somewhere. It was Land Management Bureau. Well, you're listening to Today in Ag on 96.5 KECO, and I have John D. I'm just going to go with John D, if you don't mind, here for a minute on that way I don't mess your last name up again. He's with the Jackson County Conservation District, and him and I are just sitting here having a conversation on how long he's been in Jackson County, talking about conservation projects, and we're just touching on Altus Lake Irrigation District right now, but we got other things to talk about. So what's happening with the irrigation district right now? I think when I remembered, I talked to you a couple weeks ago that there's some stuff going on with it right now.
You're saying the irrigation district or the conservation district?
The irrigation. I don't remember if it was about the conservation or the irrigation district. Is there something going on the irrigation district right now that you're helping them with?
We work on several projects with them. We cost share with the individual landowners that operate the farms that are watered from that water. We have state and federal programs that cost share with those producers to help them improve the efficiency of their irrigation water so that they can get, you know, use less water or get more use out of the water that they do turn out to make it more efficient so we can be better stewards of that water.
What kind of projects, can you elaborate a little bit on how they can conserve water, what they're doing to conserve water?
Traditionally, they just used flood irrigation. They used siphon to pull water out of their concrete ditch and run it down the furrow, and that's how they watered that land. They have to let the water run out the end of the furrow some to make sure that the whole field gets soaked up good, and so there would be some waste. One of the things we do is cost share on those concrete ditches because used to they use dirt ditches, which you know would soak up some of the water. So the concrete ditch was more efficient. Then we went to things like the tailwater recovery pits. We would cost share with them to put those pits at the end of the field, which would catch the runoff water, and they could pump it back to the top of the field and reuse it. And those systems reclaimed about 30% of the water that was turned out. Initially turned out would be caught in those pits and pumped back to be reused. Most of what we do now is subsurface drip irrigation systems. We cost share with our agency or our federal partner, the USDA Natural Resources Conservation Service. We'll cost share with them and provide the engineering to design the subsurface drip irrigation systems, and they put that in the furrow between two rows, so one drip line waters two rows of cotton or the crop, whatever the crop is, primarily cotton. So every 80 inches, they have a drip line or a drip tape placed about 14 inches under the surface of the soil. And with GPS mapping systems now, they can lay their rows out in the same spot each year so they make sure it's evenly spaced over that tape. And those subsurface drip irrigation is a very efficient way to water that cotton. You don't have any runoff. You don't have any evaporation or other losses because the water is turned loose under the surface of the soil.
And probably use less water.
Sure.
Did I lose you?
No, I'm here.
Yes.
They use less water, and it just allows them to do a better job of watering, get more use out of each gallon of water that they use. So
they reuse those tapes every year to a certain point, I'm guessing, or how's that work?
No, it's installed under the ground and it stays there. There's some of those systems that have been in place over 20 years now.
Really?
And they're still working. Yes, sir.
Oh, great. Yeah, that's because water, as far as I'm concerned, more probably just as valuable as oil and gold is, because you know, from my understanding, from everything west of Lawton and everything south of I-40 from up here, all the water, there's no more water to be gotten. It's all permitted out. Did I say that correctly?
Oh, I'm sure that's right. For the most part, there's pretty good demand for any water that's available.
Right.
So there's between municipal use and irrigation use and private use. So most of the water rights are along creeks and things like that are pretty well taken up.
Because if you haven't been to southwestern Oklahoma, once you get basically south of Elk City and south of Sayre and you're headed towards Hobart or Granite or Altus, however you want to look at it, it's a whole different landscape than it is anywhere else in Oklahoma. I mean, we got the Oklahoma Rockies, I call it, down there, and that's where Lugard's at. And my place is west of Willow, and we're down in the Breaks, and that's a whole different beast than if you were actually setting at Willow. You know, the landscape changes so much in southwestern Oklahoma, and it's a different kind of soil, but if it has the water, it grows some tremendous crops.
Yes, sir. We have been blessed with quite a bit of rain this summer. They just have turned the water on this last week and started to water through that Lugard Altus Irrigation District. And normally they would start it about the 4th of July, but we've got to put it off about a month this year because of the extra rain that we've received. And that's a good thing because we didn't have a lot of water in the lake to start with. So
no, and the runoff has been... I watch the North Fork running into Altus. I look at it almost every day. And, yes, it's up 3 or 4 foot from what it was before all this rain started. But this water, all this rain we've been getting this summer is soaking in. And it's not a – I mean, the river's running good, but it, you know, it takes a big old rain to fill Lugard up.
Yes, it does.
Well, if you got time – can if you don't mind hanging on with me, we're going to take a break here and we'll come back and we'll talk some more if you got time.
Sure.
Okay, it's Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark on 96.5 KECO.
This is the Elk City Livestock Auction Market Report for Friday, July 30th. 905 head were sold. 3 head of steers at 228 brought 540. 8 at 471 brought 180. 9 at 559 brought 163. 10 at 623 brought 168.50. 3 at 682 brought 142. 18 at 737 brought 143.75. 6 head of heifers at 252 brought 214. 10 at 469 brought 150.50. 6 at 563 brought 134.50. 15 at 673 brought 144.75. 4 at 914 brought 128. 850, 12 at 941 brought 128.75. Butcher cows were 25 to 87. Bred cows 760 to 1410. Butcher bulls 50 to 106. Pairs brought 1225 to 1500. Elk City Livestock Auction, South Highway 6 in Elk City, Oklahoma. Sale every Friday at 9 a.m. to consign. Call Brandon Hickey, 580-497-6095.
When a rental company sells stuff, you know the sale's going to be a good one. Saturday, August 7th, Grant's Auction and Realty is helping S&K Rentals sell a bunch of items on the east side of Elk City. A 75-inch by 16-foot utility trailer, a lawnmower, implements, and a Polaris Ranger. There'll be welders and a cutting torch. Also selling shop tools and equipment, shelf units, and work tables. They've got pipe and tanks for sale, an ice machine, a dorm-sized refrigerator, and office furniture. They'll also have a whole bunch of antiques and collectibles, plus a Peter Wright anvil. And what's a great sale without guns and ammo? Browning, Marlin, Winchester, Remington, Sears and Roebuck, Western Field, and Coach. The sale is Saturday, August 7th at 10 a.m. Guns and Ammo will sell at 10. It's at 1311 Airport Industrial Road on the east side of Elk City. For info, log on to grantsauction.com or pick up a copy of the Penny News. When a rental company sells stuff, you know the sale's going to be a good one. The sale is Saturday, August 7th at 10 a.m. It's at 1311 Airport Industrial Road on the east side of Elk City.
We've been part of Western Oklahoma's ag industry since statehood. I'm Marty Maddox from Great Plains Bank in Elk City. We proudly support our local FFA labor auctions and premium sales. Our local lenders have a combined 127 years of banking experience. We handle all ag-related loans, like land purchases, farm operating loans, and stocker lines of credit. And we recently helped over 700 area farmers and ranchers with their PPP loans. Great Plains Bank in Elk City is here to lend agriculture a helping hand. Member FDIC.
He loves talking about farming and ranching. Here's more of Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark on 96.5 KECO.
John D., I got to laugh every time I hear that back intro. He's got a country voice, doesn't he? So... But they, it is currently still 81 degrees, and wind still out of the south, southeast at 3 miles an hour. And I have John D. Bochy from Jackson County Conservation District on. We've been talking about, for right now, we've been talking about the Altus Lugard Irrigation District, and we'll touch on it for just more, a little bit more, and then we'll get into some of the other conservation projects he's got going on in there. I got a question for you, John. Is with all the rain we have, is it just it's saturated the big canal going from the lake down towards Altus? Does that help with a lot of saving a lot of water since it doesn't have to soak up?
When they first turn the water loose, it takes a certain amount of water to soak up that canal, since they're earthen ditches, and so any rainfall or moisture that you receive like that would help with that. A lot of times when we turn the water on, we're really dry, and so it takes more water to soak up. But since we had ample rainfall this summer, I'm sure it made it somewhat better.
But so if I get if I remember my numbers right, there's 48,000 acres of farm ground that's supplied by that irrigation district. Is that probably right? Pretty close.
Yes, sir. It's close to real close to 50,000 acres, and the big majority of that is in Jackson County. There's a few acres up in Greer County, you know, north of Blair in the Greer County edge of Greer County, but most of it's in North County.
Do you know how many pounds of cotton's done in Jackson County every year off the top of your head?
Oh, I couldn't tell you for sure.
I never looked.
It's a bunch, and it's a huge economic impact for Southwest Oklahoma. Just, I mean, all of the farming and ranching together, it sure is, but just in this irrigation district, the impact that they have, and we saw that for a couple of years during the bad drought when they didn't get to turn the water on. You know, the gins didn't fire up and run, and the compress didn't have the cotton coming in, or the warehouse didn't have the cotton coming in. So you're talking about a lot of people affected by that when that machine's not up and running. There's a lot of things affected by it.
Yeah, I remember driving through there because basically our drought was 2010 through 2015. And I remember driving through there. My son lives in Texas, and going down there and seeing them. And it was just depressing. You know, it just totally, I mean, it's hard enough when you're even outside that district. It's depressing on what that drought did to everything. And a lot of people had to get rid of their cattle. A lot of hay wasn't made unless you did have irrigation. And on and on and on. But when you drive through there, because like the year before last, I drove through there south going towards Vernon, and just yellow round bales of cotton everywhere. And it's like you was going like, yeah, you know, because 5 years ago you drove through there and they wasn't one yellow bale of hay, cotton out there. So it was hard on that area especially.
Yes, sir, it was.
But what other kind of projects you got going on in the district?
Well, on a daily basis, like I said, we work with our federal counterpart, the USDA Natural Resources Conservation Service, and we work with them to administer state and federal programs that are designed to conserve and enhance our natural resources. So that's basically what we do in a nutshell. Some of the specific things that we do is like soil health issues or soil health projects, and that would include no-till farming, cover crops, grazing management, those things that we've come a long ways in the last 10 years on soil health, just through no-till and through cover crops and learning the values of those and what they can do for us. You know, I grew up in a time when we plowed all summer and we didn't want a single weed because that weed was robbing moisture and we thought we had to keep that ground clean. Well, now we've found that those plants growing there are not as detrimental as we thought they were, that bare open ground can, through the heating of the sun, can evaporate off more moisture than the crop growing, than something growing there. So we use cover crops to keep that ground covered. We'd like to have something live plant growing year-round on that soil.
Yeah, because if you got cover during the summer, it's not baking that ground, because that ground down in there, what do they classify it as, clay?
So it's a clay loam.
Yeah, clay loam. When it gets dry, it gets hard.
That's right.
Because that, there west of Willow where my place is, you go down there and it hadn't rained in a month or two, you go down there to fix some fence and dry some T-posts, you better bring a big old sledgehammer. So it's not going to go in. And when it's dry and you're trying to pull some out, you better have a big front end loader on that tractor because it's going to use it all. So that ground gets tight and dry down there. Well, you talk about no-till and, you know, cover crops to keep, you know, just the farming in the last 20, 25 years has changed so much from when it was in the 80s, because I remember my boss over there at Foss, when we had 5,000 acres of wheat ground, as soon as we got through combining, we go through there and either disc it or chisel it up, and he'd always say, we got to get this ground worked up because them open tops and them stalks letting moisture go out the top of it. Well, that's just opposite of what we do now. We leave it there for cover.
That's right.
And so,
and you know, a lot of people, when you talk about cover crops, they say, well, we don't get enough rain in this country to do double cropping or grow two crops, but there's a lot of difference between cover crops and double cropping. You know, one of those crops is going back into the soil, not a cover crop situation. And also, by having that live plant growing, you've got roots in the soil that are and supporting the no, I can't think of what I'm trying to say. But anyway, it supports your fungus, your fungi, and your and other small creatures living in the soil. So
yeah, it also builds the soil up, you know, and it's and it
builds up your soil, the health of your soil, and improves the tilth of your soil. Your earthworms and all your other little creatures living there, they're doing their job. They're breaking down plant material and making it available for the next plant. So it just creates an ecosystem that takes care of itself.
Yeah, because when we used to disc up wheat stubble fields, for instance, you know, the only thing I ever seen out there when we come back in there and work the ground again was mice and rats, and that's why all those red-tailed hawks follow you around like a lost puppy looking for you to knock something out there so they can zoom in on it and grab it. I never seen anything else in there. Oh, yeah, there was grasshoppers, but grasshoppers aren't part of our protein program right now. They're really getting on my nerves, actually. People probably get tired of me griping about them. Have you got any down there?
Yes, sir. We've got a lot of grasshoppers here. They're pretty bad this summer. You'd think with a lot of rain they wouldn't be so bad. Usually they're worse on a drier year, but we've got plenty of them this time.
Yeah, that old farmer's myth about the more rain we get, it'll kill the grasshoppers because it makes their kidneys or livers, they get sick and they die off. Well, that's a myth, because the more rain we got this year, the bigger the grasshoppers got. So... But they well, is there anything else going in? Do you have a project besides anything with the water district? Do you have anything going on right at the minute? Like when I talked to Beckham County here, they're redoing a flood prevention dam up here. Do you guys got anything going on like that down there?
We're not doing anything on the flood prevention dam right now. We've got four of those in our district, so we have. But they're all in good shape, and we're not doing any rehabilitation on those. They're all low, what they call low hazard dams. They don't have any dwellings or anything in the floodplain below, so they're not anything to be done right at the moment. We do some of the other things we do. We do a lot of conservation education work in our county. I think that's very important, because if we don't teach the next generation about the importance of conservation, and we've got an expiration date on us. So we have to always keep that in mind and work toward preparing and educating the next generation to conserve and appreciate and to conserve our natural resources.
Yes, sir.
We do a lot of youth contests, and we do classroom presentations. We co-op with OSU Extension Center. Haley Salmon and her crew there, we do an Ag Day. Once a year, it's a two-day event. We bring every fifth grader in the county. It's like basically an outdoor classroom. We take them through all kind of aspects of agriculture. And then we go to travel to the individual schools and do what we call a water fair. It takes 2 or 3 hours, and we talk about everything from conserving water to the water cycle and how water's used, and we do that with fourth and fifth grade students as well.
That's awesome. Yep, that's the age that they actually, it might register with them good and stick with them.
Right.
And with our deal that we have here coming up this year, we're going to do some fourth through seventh grade deals on showing kids how to plant pollinators, which is, you know, good stewardship of the land, because we need pollinators for bees and monarch butterflies and everything. So we got that coming up too this year.
Right.
And but there's
another little I'm sorry.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Another project we've kind of done the last couple of years to incorporate with our cover crops is we take a corner or edge of a field and incorporate some vegetables seed in with our cover crop. And then if we're blessed with the rain and those vegetables we're able to make, then we involve a youth group like a local 4-H group or FFA chapter or something, let them help with the planting and then the harvesting of those vegetables. and we then the district distributes that produce to local food banks. We call it a farm to food bank project.
Oh, awesome.
Kind of involve the kids and help the community and make it a part of the cover crop. So it's providing cover crop benefits as well as providing produce to help local food banks and places like that.
What kind of produce vegetables are you growing?
Okra, several kinds of peas, squash, cucumbers, turnips, radishes, all those things like that. About 10 or 12 different vegetables we'll mix in with that cover crop mix seed and plant. And you know, it's not an ideal situation. You don't get a perfect row of everything, but you get some of everything, and you go out there and wade through it, and you can glean a pretty good load of produce out of those spots from time to time, and it's all just a blessing, you know, and it helps somebody else that may be less fortunate.
So can you send me a pin where those are at so I can come down there and make sure you guys are doing it right?
Yeah.
You'll get right on that?
I'll get right on that.
So
I'll send you the pin to someone that has the old guy that guards it with a shotgun.
I had a guy, I don't know if you've read this book. Have you read the book, The Worst Hard Time?
No, I haven't.
He texted in on our ag text line, our KECO ag text line here, and he said, read book called The Worst Hard Time, talks about the Dust Bowl era and what Congress did to help. So
right.
I'm going to get on Amazon when we get done, and I'm going to get that book because I had two brothers and two sisters that was born during that era, and the stories that my mom was telling me about raising kids during that era, because these houses weren't insulated, the windows wasn't these windows we have nowadays, and that was a pretty tough time in western Oklahoma.
Yes, sir, it was.
And my grandpa, who lived at Granite, he told me he remembers when they filled the dam, filled Lugard up the first time. And I don't remember the name of that. I think it's Hicks Mountain or one of those mountains out there that him and a buddy of his went out there in just an old crappy boat and went out there to go fishing because my grandpa loved to fish. He went out there and they pulled their boat up on that, you know, that little mountaintop there and made an island. And he said when they walked around that island and come back to the boat, that boat was full of rattlesnakes. And he said they were wanting to go back to the other side, even though rattlesnakes can swim, you know, I'm sure it's aluminum boat or whatever, and it had some heat in it. But he always told me about he was around when that lake filled up for the first time, and it was just a crazy moment in history around Granite and Blair.
Yeah, it would have been an interesting time. I remember my grandfather talking about that community of Lugard that was, you know, there where the lake is now, and he knew some people that lived there and stuff like that. Talked about how all that process happened, you know, with him building the dam and flooding up over where the town had been and stuff.
Well, John D., it was a pleasure to have you on the Today in Ag show, and hopefully we can have you back on again in the future, because we love having conservation talked about on the show, and you've been very informative on what you've been talking about, and you're a nice gentleman, and I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Jimmy, again for the opportunity. Conservation is a very important issue, and we need to keep it at the forefront of everybody's mind.
Yes, sir. Well, you have a great rest of the day, and God bless.
You do the same. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, it's the Day in Ag on 96.5 KECO, and we'll be right back.
When we're all on the same page, things run smoother, work gets completed faster, life is easier. And that's exactly what advanced technology from Valley does. IconX brings all of your pivots together into one manageable network with full remote capabilities, regardless of the brand. Get the most out of your pivots at a fraction of the cost of a full panel upgrade. Valley IconX. Any brand of pivot, one connected network. Smart irrigation. This is Valley.
Contact your local Valley dealer, Knutson Irrigation, 1-800-373-9325 or online at KnutsonIrrigation.com.
It's so convenient for farmers and ranchers to get what you need in one place. place. The Wheeler General Store is the do-it-best hardware store that carries vet supplies to doctor your animals, Hypro Feed, also Master Hand Milling and Smart Lick Tubs. Delivery is available if you need it. And at Wheeler Ag, right there on site, they've got dry fertilizer application with blending capabilities. Wheeler General Store and Wheeler Ag on Highway 152, a mile east of the four-way stop in Wheeler, Texas.
You can also find the Wheeler General Store on Facebook and Instagram.
This is Jerry Nine, owner of the Woodward Livestock Auction. First sale this Thursday, August 5th. We're expecting 4,500 cattle. We'll start the auction at 8 a.m. For the barn, got 60 bull and heifer calves, 4.5 to 6. They're off the cow. More than got 200 steers, 8 to 9. Junction City, Texas, 237 steers, 7 to 8.50. Alba got 44 steers at 9. Sharon, 49 steers, 8.5. Duncan, 33 steers at 9. Colgate, 130 steers, never 7.5. Slapout, 13 steers at 9. Arapaho, 60 mixed cattle, 7 to 9. Sharon, we got 63 steers at 9. Fairview, 47 mixed at 8. More than 189 steers and heifers, 7.50. And a Darko, 344 steers, 8 to 10.50. Moreland, 418 steers, 8 to 9. Dodge City, Kansas, 50 steers, 7.5. And Moreland, 182 steers, 8.5. Again, we're expecting 4,500 cattle. We will start the auction 8 a.m. sharp. Remember, we work 100% for the seller. Never lying to the buyer. I stay in the ring start to finish. Make sure we get the most we can for every head, whether you run 2 head or 2,000. If you pay attention to the butcher cow market, yesterday we sell 1 cow for 91, quite a few of them fleshy cows for 81 to 86. Might be a better time to cull them cows now rather than wait when there's more of them selling in September, October. Thanks again, Jerry Nine and the Woodward Livestock Auction.
Oh, Jimmy's all wound up and ready to go. Here comes more of Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark on 96.5 KECO.
Hey, welcome back. I hope you guys enjoyed the show with John D. Boucher. I see, I'm going to say French now. He's probably not. He's not on the line now, so I can mess it up. But anyway, that was very interesting. That irrigation district down there is just fascinating to me. And I know you guys all wonder about it sometime. But it's quite an operation. It ain't just turn a valve on and everybody gets a certain amount of water. I mean, it probably is, but there's a lot more to it. This will be our weather forecast for the week. Today, high, currently it's 81. Today's high will be 88. Tomorrow, 90. Friday, 97. There is a slight chance of rain tonight, by the way, according to Lacey yesterday. But what I seen this morning, they already took it out of the forecast. But she thinks you still got a little chance of rain tonight. Saturday's 99, Sunday's 100, Monday's 101. I hope it stops there and starts coming back. Towards the end of next week, it looks like we'll have some changes on the way. Peanut stockpiles are up 2.43 billion pounds. Are in stock right now. That's up 8.5% from last year. 741 million pounds are shelled, and that's up 13% from last year. Roasted is up 4.4%. 1.65 billion pounds are in farmer stock, and that's down 3%. Virginia peanuts are up 17%. Runners are up 27%, which is not good according to the report, but overall, this whole report's really good, they said. Spanish is up 5.1%. Government contract is up 4% for the year, but 340% this month alone. That's crazy. Peanut candy is up 12% from last year. Peanut snacks are up 5.1% from last year. And peanut usage is up 2.5%. Well, that's pretty good report. The average price of U.S. alfalfa hay, speaking of that, nobody text in. Wait a minute, we got a hot one on the text line. Somebody's listening from Gulf Shores, Alabama. And I'm going to take a wild guess by reading the rest of these texts. Bill Dance. Bill Dance is texting into the show. Thanks, Bill. Appreciate you listening from Gulf Shores, Alabama. Hope you sunburned. But anyway, the average price of U.S. hay, alfalfa hay in June jumped from $5 up to another $5 a ton, according to the USDA Agriculture Prices Report. It was the seventh consecutive month that alfalfa price posted a month-over-month gain. The average price for Supreme and Premium alfalfa hay has increased $4 per ton, after climbing $15 per ton in the previous month. The alfalfa hay price averaged $199 per ton during June, which was $20 per ton above 1 year ago. Typically, the average monthly price retreats in June, but widespread drought and strong commodity prices have made this year's anything but typical. The June average price exceeded any month in 2020 and the highest price recorded since May of 2019, when alfalfa hit $204 per ton. A whopping 10 states registered double-digit month-over-month alfalfa price gains in June, leading this group from South Dakota, posting a $37 per ton improvement. It was followed by North Dakota, up $28, and Idaho, up $20, Nebraska, up $20, and Washington, up $20. I'm just reading that, and I can guess that's where the drought area is, and they are not getting much relief right now. Four states have double-digit price decline. That was Ohio down $15 a ton, Texas down $14 a ton, and New York and Michigan down $10 a ton. The highest average alfalfa prices were reported in Pennsylvania at $253 per ton, New Mexico $240 a ton, Colorado $225, and Oregon $220. The lowest prices was posted in Nebraska at $145 per ton, Missouri $155 per ton, and North Dakota $164 a ton. Well, I got a little bit of time, and I found this interesting article that I want to go over with you guys. And by the way, I know there's a farmer out there that wants some free advertising on the radio. If you got any hay for sale, text it in to me at 580-225-9697, and I'll put it on the show. And we only got about seven minutes left. But this is a really good article. It says, two ways to pay for a hay barn. Sometimes the method with the least expense ends up costing you the most, said Brian Beer, an extension area livestock specialist for Clemson University. Beer proves his point in recent Southeast Cattle Advisor by comparing three different methods of hay storage: uncovered outside, stacked and tarped, and in a barn. To make an economic comparison, the livestock specialist used an example for a 50-cow herd being fed for 150 days. He assumes a total intake of 133 tons of Bermuda grass hay or 266 bales. Based on a consumption rate of 2.5% of body weight and 1,000-pound bales. Every storage method will have some hay loss, notes Beer, but the difference between storing bales outside and uncovered is considerably higher than when it's tarped or in a barn. Based on a previous hay storage research, Beer assigns a loss factor of 5% to barn storage, 10% to bales stacked outside in tarp, and a conservative estimate of 30% of bales left outside and uncovered. To assign to a cost to these losses, he summarizes that additional hay acres will be needed to cover the greater loss of the outside storage system. Using Clemson's hay enterprise budget, he assumes the total cost of producing an acre of Bermuda grass is at $512. At a 5-ton yield level, that equates to $102 per ton or $51 per 1,000-pound bale. Based on these values, it would take two additional acres of hay production to make up for losses from the tarp system compared to the barn storage, and seven additional acres for outside uncovered system under assumed 30% loss scenario. The resulting ad productions are shown in Table 1. And of course, there is a cost that is associated with each storage method. Beer figures the cost of a barn at $2,006 per year. This is based on a price of $7 per square bale for a 48 by 48 foot structure, a 5.5% interest charge, and an annual repair and maintenance cost of 2% with a 20 year life. For the tarp system, the cost is figured at $390 per year. That assumes that four tarps are needed with an initial investment of $1,280 and a four-year lifespan with no annual repair and maintenance charge. Beer assigns there's no annual cost to the outside uncovered system. Next, the livestock specialist calculates the total annual cost associated with the storage methods by adding the annual production and the storage charge cost for each system. The lowest total annual cost comes with the tarp system, although Beer points out that some farmers no doubt would feel it's not worth $592 per year to wrestle with tarps and hay is being harvested and fed out. He forgot to come to Western Oklahoma and talk to us about the wind, too. The next lowest cost system is to build a hay barn. Hay that is left outside and uncovered costs the most of all the annual bases, $1,579 more a year than building a barn is what he come up with. I thought that was a pretty interesting read for you guys. Hope you enjoyed it. But that's about it for the day. So you guys have a great day, and God bless. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark on 96.5 KECO.
Hi, I'm Randy Renner on First Oklahoma Ag. Well,